Continuing our division previews here on the Podium Game Podcast, I'm Brian Gimmerman, joined by Jared Dubin. Jared, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, man. It's good to be back. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're going to do the Pacific Division now. All right, so we will start with one of the teams that has the most star power in the Pacific, though, the Los Angeles Clippers. If you haven't been following along with the podcast, the division previews, what we do is quick profile, take a look at lineups, reason to be excited, reason to be worried, and storylines. Sometimes those get mushed together and we don't recycle through and say the same things again. We'll start off with the profile of last year. Went 57-25. They lost in six games to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference quarterfinals. Head coach Doc Rivers entering his second year. They had the best offensive rating in the league. They were tied for seventh in defensive rating, and they had the seventh fastest pace.
Western Conference semifinals, right? Because they beat...
semifinals.
In the first round?
Yes, you are correct. They beat the Warriors in seven games, then lost to the Thunder in six. I just wrote that wrong. Good call. Nice catch right there. See, at least I know you're paying... I was just checking if you were paying attention to what I was actually saying. lineups. Pretty much from the point where they traded Jared Dudley, expecting pretty much the same thing with the starting lineup, right?
Well, they traded Dudley in the offseason, but yeah, they had to use the same lineup they used once everybody got healthy towards the end of last year. Redick, Paul, Barnes, Griffin, Jordan.
My brain is not functioning this morning. All right, so what do you think about their bench and how they're going to fill out the rotation?
They have some interesting guys. I like Farmar as a backup point guard. They upgraded their badly needed backup big man spot with Spencer Hawes. I know people like to make fun of him, but he's one of very few bigs in the league that can shoot from the outside and pass well. A very versatile offensive player. Obviously leaves something to be desired on defense, and I'd say that that's where their bench is going to struggle between Farmar and Crawford, Hawes. They have other guys on the Big Baby, possibles, Chris Douglas Roberts, possible Reggie Bullock, Turtaloo. Really the only guys on their bench that are defenders are Epe Udo, and Reggie Bullock was a pretty good defender in college, but he really didn't get any minutes last year. So I think that, you know, bench defense again for them will be sort of their biggest issue. But I think that their bench is deeper than it was last year just by virtue of getting an actual big man who could play NBA minutes in Hawes.
I think their biggest issue is CDR's hair.
Maybe his shorts.
Well, the shorts too. But his hair, it reminds me of like the bowl cut I had when I was in middle school, except with braids.
You know what it reminds me of? So you saw The Sixth Man, right?
Oh, of course.
The guy from Georgetown? What was his name? Gerard something. Georgetown and The Sixth Man. It's that kind of hair.
That's sick that you can remember that off the top of your head.
I'm not a normal person.
That's like, I know The Sixth Man, I know the basic plot, I've seen it many of times. I couldn't have told you. I know they went to Washington, I wouldn't have known one team they played against in the movie.
The whole thing, like Antoine pushes him when he tries to take off for a dunk and he hits his face in the backboard.
Yeah, that stuff I remember. I remember that, the basic plot and how he shows up.
That's it, man.
What a great movie.
Oh, classic flick.
The amount of amazing bad basketball movies they are is Eddie, Celtic Pride. There's just so many good ones.
Oh, yeah.
The rotation, yeah, it's better than last year, and they won 57 games last year. The one guy I'm interested to see with them this year is Reggie Bullock. I hope they're able to find a way to get him some minutes. I think maybe I don't think you're sacrificing too many games if you play him, but I think with where this team is, they at least want to try and get a little bit of influx in young talent, and he's really like the one guy they have outside of the big names, Blake and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, they have him and the guy they drafted this year from Washington. I can't remember his name for some reason, but they're both wing guys. But I think if we know Doc Rivers, which I think after all this time we do, I think we know he's going to play Hedo Turkoglu.
He's so bad.
Yeah, but he's a veteran who was good against the Celtics back in the day, so I think we know that Doc's going to play him.
Yeah, him and Glenn Davis just get the... Glenn Davis was obviously played with Doc and without him, but I'm trying to look up the name of the rookie they got from Washington.
CJ Wilcox just found it.
Okay. And what did he go in the first round, or was that a second round pick? He went in the first. That's guaranteed.
Late one. First, yeah. 28, 29, something like that.
Yeah, I don't see. I see Bullock playing more than Wilcox getting a chance.
Yeah, I mean, Doc has never really been one to give a ton of minutes to rookies. Bullock didn't play much last year. I don't imagine Wilcox will play much this year. Plus, they have, you know, older veteran guys on the wings. They have Crawford, they have Douglas Roberts, they have Turtaloo, and they signed the Australian guy, I think is a wing also. Like
Ingles is his last name.
Ingles.
Reasons to be excited, reasons to be worried. Blake Griffin entering age 25 season, fifth-year veteran. He's been showing improvement as his career's gone on. How good do you think he can be this year?
I mean, he can be one of the handful of best players in the league like he was last year. You know, he's incredible. People, you know, like to say all he does is dunk. Last year, I think I probably read like 20 pieces on how Blake Griffin does a lot more than dunk these days. That's not to say they weren't all good. A lot of them were. But it was just I think it was a big story last year. Now people know, you know, how versatile of a player he is, especially on offense, where you can put him in the post with the back of the basket, get him to face up, pick and roll, pick and pop. He can do so many different things as an offensive player. He's such a good passer, too. I mean, there's really no limit to how good he could be as an offensive player. Whether he takes another leap into like a top five player stratosphere, I mean, it's super tough just because there are so many players already at that level. But if he can make a leap and, you know, even get to the level that DeAndre Jordan was on defense last year, that elevates him so much.
Do you think the corner three is something that could help him? He took one in the first preseason game and made it, and he looked really comfortable and really smooth. It didn't look like it put any strain on him whatsoever to take that shot.
He actually experimented with a few of them last year. Not that many, maybe like 15 or so throughout the whole season. But obviously adding a shot, you know, usually is taking 18 to 20 footers. And if he steps back 3-4 feet, all of a sudden it's worth an extra point. It's never going to be bad. I'm actually looking into the history of big men trying to extend their range to three-point land, seeing how successful or unsuccessful it is. That's something that I've been doing a little bit of research on. So,
okay, that's a story you're working on for one of the many websites you write for.
I don't know which one it's going to go to yet, but I'm looking into it.
And then the only question I have about that is, and I think it's, I saw someone else, I forget who, bring up this point. Is it really the best thing for your offense to have Blake Griffin standing in the corner?
Well, it's not necessarily going to be that he's camped out in the corner all game. Like, just because he's experimenting with corner threes doesn't mean that he's only going to take corner threes.
Oh, no, obviously.
If it's something that he does every so often, I don't think that's a problem at all.
Reasons to be worried, we already hit on that with the depth. Storylines, do they need to make a trade to get past the Thunder or Spurs, or do you think they're good enough as constructed?
I think they might be good enough as constructed, but that doesn't mean a trade wouldn't help them. I think that those three teams are clearly a step above the rest of the teams in the West. You know, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how good Blake and DeAndre are on defense. If they're not a tandem that can anchor a top 10 defense, then they might have to go out and get a defensive big man.
And I mean, since they were seventh last year, there shouldn't be, and then it's going to be year two with that coach. You wouldn't think they would drop off.
I thought they were 11th last year.
I had the NBA.com numbers that I pulled, unless I pulled it wrong, had them at 7th, and they were tied with the Grizzlies. It was 102.1 was their defensive rating, unless I looked at that wrong.
Yeah, 7th, good call.
All right, which...
I thought they were 11th.
Maybe they were 11th last year, because they made a jump from last year to the year before. Whatever, I just confused that. And from 2012 to 2013 to 13-14, they made a jump.
They were ninth the year before.
So they've been top 10 for 2 years in a row now.
Better than I thought.
Yeah, I didn't think they were ninth in 12-13. I wouldn't have guessed that. All right, the team that the Clippers beat in the opening round last year, the Golden State Warriors, they went 51-31. Head coach Steve Kerr, first season with the team. They were 12th in offensive rating, 3rd in defensive rating, and 6th in pace. Starters, it looks like it's going to be...
Well, I think probably they'll start Curry, Livingston, Iguodala, Kevin Love, and Bogut, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Nope. Whoops.
Oh, they didn't do that?
No, they didn't do that.
Oh, okay.
And with this... the escalating cap with the numbers that broke, does that make that decision look worse or better?
I think it makes it look worse, because now when they give Klay Thompson his max, it's going to be worth a buckload more.
Well, won't Klay come in before it rises if it's this summer?
Yeah, good call. Yeah, you're right.
But still, even saying that, then they would have gotten Love signed on a decent deal, unless he took a one-year deal and then went at it again.
Either way, let's keep going. Talk about the rotation.
No matter what, it was stupid. All right, so the stars, it's going to be the same thing as last year. Bogut, Lee, Iguodala, Klay, and Curry they started in the first preseason game. That's what most expected to be. Would you keep it like that, or would you try and get someone like Draymond Green in there?
I think I'd keep it that way. I like having all that passing out there, and between Klay, Iguodala, and Bogut, you have enough defense that you don't need to throw Green into the mix. I also like Green being able to cause havoc against second units a lot. I mean, he's going to get starts. Lee's going to miss games. Bogut's going to miss games. Iguodala's going to miss games. Like, he's going to be worked in. He's going to play a lot of minutes anyway. I don't think you necessarily need to break up the core starting five to insert him in there.
The bench is interesting. I like Barbosa and Livingston is a pretty cool backcourt. Livingston, they can complement each other, I think, pretty well. They still have Spates, Azili if he ever gets healthy, and then the always interesting Harrison Barnes. Are you completely done with him, or do you think there's something there that can be molded into a better player?
I'm not done with him at all. I think he's going to be good. I think that last year was a struggle for him because his role got sort of thrown out of whack when they signed Iguodala. All of a sudden, he had to do completely different things with completely different people on the court. I think having another year to get used to it will be good for him. And, you know, I'd like to see him get in the post more. You know, he's a 6'8", 6'9", small forward with a big body, and he showed both in college and as a rookie that he has sort of that shoulder dip fadeaway that can work pretty well. And he's got good size. He's got good touch. It's more of a matter of creating those opportunities. I think that they'll post up less as a team this year without Mark Jackson because they're not going to match up on as much. But I think that that's still a good way to use him when he gets against smaller defenders on the wing.
Reasons to be excited. You just kind of hit on it. They're going Mark Jackson's gone, Steve Kerr's in. Where do you think, outside of just the post-ups, how do you think he can help this offense have a better flow to it?
They went so much under Mark Jackson attacking matchups. It was a very, very 90s style offense where, you know, they had all of these sort of genius level passers in the lineup with Curry and Iguodala and Lee and Bogut, and even Green can pass a little bit. And now they even have Livingston also. And it's not so much that they didn't move the ball well as they moved the ball into the matchup that they wanted and then stopped the ball. And a lot of times things would bog down. I think having more options built into plays, similar to what we talked about with the Thunder, will be a big help.
Reasons to be worried. I don't think they've really done anything. Now, look, it's Steph Curry, so it's hard to help keep the offense at a high level when he's not on the court. But they really did nothing to address trying to bump it up a little bit. I don't see any way they're really going to be able to be very functioning.
Well, if they stagger the minutes better, you know, last year they played too many minutes with none of the starters on the court. I think that if they get probably Clay and Lee makes the most sense to play with the second unit just because they're the two guys, the two non-Curry guys from the first unit that are best at sort of helping to facilitate offense.
You don't think...
With, you know, his jump, his post-ups, his jumper, and his passing. And Clay, just by dragging people out with how good of a shooter he is. I think they played Iguodala with some of those lineups last year, and, you know, as much as you think he can run the offense, it didn't really work all that well. I think sort of lineup like Livingston, Clay, Barnes, Lee, and Green, you know, while it might get hurt inside on defense, they'll at least score significantly better than they did last year. Those units last year, whenever Curry was off the court, it was I think they went from the best offense in the league to the worst offense in the league whenever Steph came off the court.
That's just insane. How good he is really, really crazy. A storyline, the Steve Kerr era, mixed in all our talk right there. That was kind of included. So let's move on to the Phoenix Suns. They were the surprise team in the league last year, going 48-34. But now have kind of become a divisive topic. Head coach Jeff Hornacek is entering year two. Offensive rating, they were 8th. Defensive rating, 13th. Pace, they finished at 8th. Their lineups, one change from last year. They lost Channing Frye. They're replacing him with Markieff Morris. They'll have Plumlee, P.J. Tucker, Eric Bledsoe, and Goran Dragic still there. Rotation, hoping for Alex Lund to be involved, but he's once again hurt right now, but he should be ready for the season. But there's concerns there that he just can't stand the court. Marcus Morris, Anthony Tolliver, Isaiah Thomas, Gerald Green, maybe T.J. Warren. Shavlik Randolph's probably going to have to play a little bit because of their lack of depth in the front court. What do you think about how this team looks this year?
I still like them. It'll be a very similar team to last year. I think that's fairly obvious. People criticize them somewhat, not for the value of the Isaiah Thomas deal, but for the opportunity cost. You know, why do you need 3 point guards? And the answer is because if you're going to have 2 on the court at all times, having 3 isn't a problem. It's a necessity. You need to have 3 good point guards if you're always going to play 2. I think that those guys will work well no matter what pairing they're in. Some will work better than others. Like, I think they both, Dragic and Thomas, both make more sense with Bledsoe next to them. They make sense next. Good. The thing that, the major difference here is not having Channing Frye. And I think that was a lot. He was a much bigger key to their success last year than anybody realizes. He's a guy who has so much of a gravitational pull as a pick-and-pop player. He's one of the few big men that draws true stay-attached coverage where his guy doesn't leave him on that pick-and-pop, and that helped create driving lanes for Bledsoe and for Dragic, and that's what helped them both have the best season of their careers. And, you know, I like Markieff Morris. He's a fairly good shooter from, you know, just inside the three-point line, but he's not nearly the shooter that Frye is. And he doesn't have nearly the gravity that Frye does. So it's going to be a little bit different there.
And Tolliver and Morris can both shoot. Tolliver and the other Morris can both shoot threes, but they don't have the ability to defend at the 4 or play the 5 like Frye did last year. Reasons to be excited. We kind of talked about it. Almost the same team as last year. Something that goes under the radar. I mean, when Bledsoe was healthy, this team came really close to basically playing at an elite level. In just over 1,000 minutes, Bledsoe and Tucker were on the court. They had a 98 defensive rating. So,
yeah, I mean, I think a concern somewhat would be that so many guys played over their heads last year. Tucker, Morai, Dragic, Bledsoe, those guys all had career years. If only it looked like, you know, he was absolutely nothing at the that all of a sudden turned into, you know, sort of a capable, if not starting level center, at least average level center. So there's a fear of regression. I like most of these guys. I think they're good players. Maybe Tucker and Green, I think, are probably the best bets to regress just because they had previously established a level of play that was so far below what they did last year. But Bledsoe was a guy on a trajectory that just needed an opportunity. Dragic had always been good and just got more efficient because he had sort of the perfect situation around him.
more I look on in that, by the way, the more I... they sort of just took the next step in their evolution, and Plumlee could have just been a five. So I think it's less of a team-wide regression thing and more just their wing guys in Tucker and Green, I think, are really good candidates to regress.
Tucker, defensively, I don't see any reason he can't keep doing what he does. And
but all of a sudden he's shooting like 36-37% from three and becoming like a corner three master. I'm skeptical until I see it repeated.
Yeah, he shot significantly better in one corner than the other. I forget which one it was. I don't have a shot chart up in front of me. But that's really important for the Suns' spacing. What worked so well last year was the way the shot charts were. You had Tucker work out of the corners. Fry worked mainly on the right wing. Bledsoe and Dragic were basically above the breaks, mid-range, and at the rim. So their court balance was really kind of perfect for how the players complemented each other. And I don't know if they can generate that same type of court balance with the roster this year.
Yeah, I would agree that court balance, obviously, you know, Fry being a guy and picking pops and just spotting up around the perimeter as well really helped in that sense. And it was the left corner for PJ Tucker. It was 35 for 73, 48% from the left corner, 33 for 93, 36% from the right corner.
Storylines. I think this gets overlooked in the best backcourt discussion. Dion Waiters and Kyrie Irving, no. I get the argument for Beal and Wall, but I think that's more based on what people think Beal is going to become, not where he is right now. Klay and Curry are obviously... I think Bledsoe and Dragic are the best backcourt in the NBA, if you're doing it based on actual production.
This is like my least favorite discussion.
You hate it? All right, well, I'm glad I brought it up then.
Although, I think that it's probably Chris Paul and J.J. Redick.
That's a good one that doesn't get brought up enough.
You know, Paul is the best point guard in the league at a level so far above what these other guys who are in the discussion for best backcourt are that, you know, however much better than Redick, Beal or Waiters or Bledsoe or whoever might be, if they are, is overshadowed by how much better Chris Paul is than the rest of those point guards.
All right, we'll let you off the hook. We'll just leave that discussion right there and go on to the Sacramento Kings. They went 28-54 last year. Head coach Mike Malone, year two. Their offensive rating was ranked 20th, defensive rating 23rd. Their pace was 14th. Lineups. DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, Darren Collison, I penciled in as starters. Where do you think they go with the other two spots?
Man, I really just don't know at all. I have no idea what this team will do. It's honestly, it's not even worth guessing. It is the weirdest roster in the league, I think.
You have two guys you could go with at shooting guard, unless they do something crazy, like start Omri Caspi, which I really, that'd be really stupid. But they could go, you got Stauskas or McLemore.
Or they could go with McCallum or Sessions, one of those guys too, and sort of go with the dual point guard look. I don't necessarily think they will. I think it'll probably be McLemore, I guess.
I'm not big. I didn't like him in college.
I liked him. I think he was, you know, sort of a superstar level guy, but he really struggled to shoot last year. That was a big problem. He was a better shooter in college. He was more able to create for himself in college, too, than he was last year. You know, year two is when you hope the guy makes the leap. I don't know if he'll necessarily start right away, though. I really just don't have any clue what this team's going to do. Maybe Derek Williams starts, and they sort of use him and Gay as both combo forwards. I honestly don't know.
I think my guess would be they stick with Jason Thompson in the starting line.
Yeah, they always like Jason Thompson. No matter who the coach is, they like Jason Thompson.
And he's a reasonably decent player.
He's a good rebounder. Yeah. And he's not an overly sound technical defender, but he throws his body around, knows how to, you know, create chaos.
I think Stauskas, I mean, I'm biased on this. I'm not going to even pretend like I'm not. But I think he can be a good offensive player in the NBA.
Oh, I agree. I'm very big on Stauskas.
I get the concern of the short arms and him getting, he will struggle at times to do some of the off the dribble stuff. He won't be as good as he was at that in college, but he can be a good secondary pick and roll guy. He'll be able to attack closeouts, and his shot, I have no concern about that whatsoever.
You're that good of a shooter, and you have, you know, even minimal offensive skills, which he has more than that. You know, I think I agree he can work well as a secondary pick and roll guy, and he's such a good shooter already that he should be able to contribute in at least some way. Defensively, I think he'll struggle a little bit just with necessarily the speed as much as the, I don't know what word I'm looking for.
Well, he's a train wreck on defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was a little bit better than giving credit for. You know, he came out and talked about how people are always going to attack him on defense because he's white. I don't necessarily know whether that's true. I think it's more that he just looks unathletic. And he has a sort of a slight build for a guy as tall as he is. So I think he'll struggle defending bigger wings. Especially because they have small point guards in Collison and McCown. So it'll be interesting.
Reasons to be excited. Rudy Gay was actually kind of good. I'd say he went back more towards what he was in Memphis than what he was in Toronto when he was a pretty decent player. And when Cousins and Gay were on the court together, they were pretty decent. They were not a bad team.
Yeah, but I think that you also have to remember that they spent a lot of their time with Isaiah Thomas, and he's not there anymore.
That was my next note.
Okay, well, I'm just reading your mind then. They did well, and I liked the way Gay played, sort of. And this is something that Tom Zeller wrote about last year. Whenever he's played next to sort of a high-usage big man, he's been much better than when he hasn't. You know, he's better next to Zebo and Gasol than he was next to Jonas and Amir Johnson. And I think that sort of worked well with Cousins as well.
I would say the problem with Gay in Toronto was less about the big man that he played with, that him and DeRozan were just about as bad of a fit as you could get for two wings on the same team, that they just, there was too much overlap in what they did.
Somewhat, yeah. I think that playing the four on Team USA should help, especially if he winds up playing next to Derek Williams a bunch. He came into camp on the first day and talked about how he now has experience doing that and is more comfortable with it than he was before. So maybe they go small sometimes and play Cousins and Gay in the front court. You know, and maybe they play, I don't even know who they play on the wings. Maybe they go Macklemore and Stauskas next to Collison, or Macklemore and Caspi, Stauskas and Caspi, things like that. But they have the ability to go small more now. And I know that Vivek last year, I interviewed him for an ESPN Q&A, talked about how they want to be more positionless and quick and things like that, push the pace, so that would help in that respect too.
Reasons to be worried. As you said, they did well with Cousins, Gay, and Thomas on the court together. Well, now Darren Collison is replacing Isaiah Thomas. I think Ramon Sessions is better than Collison.
I think they're paying Collison and Sessions as much as they could have gotten Thomas for, which just doesn't make any sense at all. There's no way around it, especially because they said they were looking for more of a pure passing point guard. And friend of the program, Seth Partnow from Nylon Calculus and Hardwood Paroxysm, has been, you know, doing these things that chart how pass-first or shoot-first point guards are. And Thomas actually was more of a pass-first point guard than Collison was in the last couple of years.
And if you watch the Clippers last year, Collison was most effective when he was playing with Chris Paul. And
he also hasn't been effective at all ever other than when he's been Chris Paul's backup. It's very strange, but that's true.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing he does is he's a pretty good catch and shoot guy.
I mean, this is a guy who 2 seasons ago in Dallas was benched for Mike James, 37-year-old Mike James, who had a PER of like 9 that season. And I know, you know, PER has its faults, but it's not like Mike James is good on defense, so yeah.
And who did he split time with in Indiana when he was going? He got traded there from
George Hill.
It was Hill was there already. Yeah, Hill. They decided Hill was better than him and went with
right.
him in that
direction. Well, Collison was actually the starter when they were there together, and then they let him walk to Dallas and they gave George Hill the job.
Storylines. Cousins is one of my favorite players in the league.
I love him so much.
If you were taking a team from scratch, he was your first player. How would you build around him?
Shooting. I'd have like 2 3-and-D guys.
Give me. Let's do realistic players that, you know, not taking all the best players in the league. Like with some role players, maybe one other. How would you construct the team?
Put me on the spot. Danny Green would be one of my guys. I put Danny Green on a team with anyone. Low cost, good shooter, fights hard on defense. You know, sometimes he gets. You know, he does Danny Green things that make Pop stare him down, but for that cost, it's about as good as you're going to get. It's making something like $3.5 million. So that type of player, I think you need a point guard who.
I think Mike Conley would be the point guard I put with him.
Mike Conley, Ty Lawson. Someone who is a good pick and roll player and is going to push the pace, but also knows when to slow it down too. I think it's tough, but I think he also needs to be a good shooter. Like I'd rather someone like Conley than Rondo, for example.
Yeah, and Conley's defense in front of him, I would want a strong perimeter D surrounding
Cousins. Strong perimeter D, and then a strong shooting big and a strong defensive big. So something like. So you have the option between, say, Kostakoupis and Ryan Anderson next to him, something like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, I like that way. And then like Wes Matthews type at the three.
Mike Conley, Danny Green, Wes Matthews, Ryan Anderson, Cousins, and Kostakoupis.
Yeah, that gives you a nice balance of shot creation, defense. You kind of get everything, and you can cover up Cousins' flaws. And
yeah, I think you need a little bit more perimeter creation there. Just someone who can maybe instead of Matthews, I was going to say Parsons, but then it hurts your defense a little bit. But I think it might be worth it for a little bit of extra creativity on the wing.
You could join Wes Matthews and Chandler Parsons into one person and get it all.
Yeah, then you'd have shit. I don't know. I was going to try to come up with an analog for who Wes Matthews plus Chandler Parsons would be, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not very funny, so I'm not going to even try that. The Los Angeles Lakers profile last year, 27-55. Byron Scott, year one. Offensive rating, they were 21st defensive rating, third worst, and pace they played at the second fastest pace in the league. Starters. Nash, Kobe, Wes Johnson, Boozer, Hill. That's pretty much what they've said they're doing, right?
I think so, yeah. I like their bench unit better. Not necessarily better, I just think it's going to be more fun. Especially if they let Kobe play with the bench guys. Lynn, Randall, Swaggy, Ed Davis. I think it'll be a fun group. And there are some young guys here that are not necessarily interesting, but, I mean, Clarkson and Randall both have a chance to be good. I love Randall. I think he's not necessarily, you know, future Zebo, but that mold of player, someone who's just so strong and can get his shot off, even though he doesn't necessarily look like he should be able to get a ton of shots off. I like him a lot, and I'm always partial to lefties. He's such a good rebounder. I think it's a waste that they're going to give Carlos Boozer a whole bunch of minutes instead of him.
That was my reasons to be excited that you just hit on Randall and Clarkson. I mean, these are two guys we're looking at that are the key to the future for this team. If they both turn into something, that kind of changes the complexion of this team going forward.
Well, I think also it'll be exciting to watch. Their pick goes to the Suns if it's outside the top five. This team is going to be bad. So I think it'll be exciting to watch how close they come to keeping their pick and whether they shut guys down to keep their pick or if Kobe sort of goes on a Kobe thing where he's like, I don't give a fuck if we have our pick next year. I'm done in 2 years anyway. It'll be interesting.
And the other story, I mean, this is basically, it's 2 years out, but it's kind of a Jeter-ish feel to it with Kobe and Nash here. Like, that's outside of watching the young guys. For the majority, I mean, for people like us, yeah, we're going to watch the young guys, but for the large majority, it's getting kind of one last chance to see these two guys on their way out.
Oh, man, I'm going to miss Kobe so much, man. Like, it's going to be horrible when he retires. You know, him and KG, really, are the guys where, you know, people our age, you know, we're within 2-3 years of each other. We've watched their entire careers play out, from guys who were drafted and didn't play that much to, you know, rotation players to all-stars to superstars to best players on the planet to, you know, old grizzled vets who are just spewing hilarious quotes all the time if you're Kobe, and old grizzled vets who never talk to anybody except when they're cursing out European dudes like Garnett. But I'm gonna miss him a lot.
Kobe was the first person I ever had curse in an answer to a question I asked. That was that was an accomplishment. And then I got to stand there the night he went off about Kupchak, talking about trading Gasol. I was in that scrum. He had 10 turnovers that night. I remember I was going to be the guy who was going to ask about the 10 turnovers. That was my plan. And then he just started flipping out, and I just stood there. I was like, I don't think I'm going to say anything. I think I'm just going to stand here silently.
Yeah, I mean, the man is a national treasure. what do you think they're gonna get out of Nash and Lynn, though? I think that... Actually, I want to know what you think first.
When Nash was able to get on the court last year, he actually had a couple moments where he looked okay. And in the first preseason game, he looked like he was healthy. There's just no way to know how long that's going to be able to stay. As long as his body cooperates, I still think Nash can be an effective player. His shot's going nowhere, and his brain's going nowhere, so he's going to understand how to play, and he's still going to have effective skills. I just don't think his body is going to hold up over an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you watch that Grantland documentary that he did throughout a lot of last season, you could see just how much it was weighing on him, both physically and mentally. Really interesting to see whether he can even stay on the court. Obviously, I'd love to see him have, you know, like a vintage Nash season, just... You know, I mean, I don't know how much it would even elevate that team considering the talent around him, but if he could just stay healthy and shoot well and look like a reasonable facsimile of Steve Nash, that would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be fun to see one last time. And
what do you think about Lynn there, though? Honestly, even one just like vintage Nash game where he scores like 12 points on 5-for-5 shooting and has like 14 assists or something like that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, seeing that a couple times a game would be really cool. Lynn's weird for me because my thing with Lynn is I think he does have skills that help. The problem is I think he's not good enough to have the ball in his hands all the time and be the centerpiece of an offense, but that's also the only way he's comfortable playing.
Yeah, I think you need to make him sort of a Jamal Crawford type guy, where he comes off the bench and all you ask him to do is run pick and rolls and score. And I think that with Nash starting and with Nick Young out, that's going to be what he's going to have to do on the second unit. You know, who else is going to create baskets there? It's going to be him and Randall. It's not like Ellington or Xavier Henry or Ryan Kelly is going to create baskets. So I think that that's actually a good role for him here.
I like Ryan Kelly.
He's fine.
Yeah, I don't. They talked about him bulking up so he could play the four a little bit. That's originally what I thought he was going to do when he came out of Duke, and he was going to be like a poor man Ryan Anderson that was even a worse rebounder. But he went from like a fat guy to a skinny guy. Like, the way he changed his body was pretty crazy.
Yeah, I saw him in the locker room last year when they came to New York, and I thought he looked like a different guy than when he was at Duke. It was startling.
It was Le'Veon Bellish.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. For people who don't know, that it's Steelers running back. He lost like 10, 15 pounds, came back looking like, now he looks like DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, when he was at Michigan State, he was like a slow, plodding running back that occasionally did a really cool hurdle, and now he runs like...
He looked like Eddie Lacy in terms of body type, but now he looked like DeMarco Murray.
Yes, which... And so when people tell you...
It's preparable for the other. Like, Lacy's body type works for him. Obviously, you know, we're going into football now, but Bell became an entirely different player by slimming down.
Yeah, and so anyone that tells you that smoking weed's bad for you, Le'Veon Bell got caught smoking weed, and he's incredibly more skinny than he used to be.
Getting suspended for 5 games in the NBA, though, so don't do it.
Anything else you have on the Lakers?
Long live the Mamba.
Yeah, give us one more year, Kobe. It'll be fun. You and Nash, give us
well, two more years for Kobe.
Well, yeah, but give me one of two that he's decent in. I'm not being greedy. Yeah, you want two? That's greedy. I'm not going to be greedy with it. All right, so that wraps up the Pacific Division podcast. We have two more divisions to go, then we're going to do a preview. We'll be back next week, and that wraps up this edition of the Podium Game podcast.